Chapter 3. How long Conan stood drowned in dizzy cogitation, he never knew. A voice shook him out of his gaze, a feminine voice that shrieked more and more loudly as if the owner of the voice were being borne nearer. Conan recognized that voice, and his paralysis vanished instantly. A quick bound carried him high up on the narrow ledges, where he clung, kicking aside the clustering images to obtain room for his feet. Another spring and a scramble, and he was clinging to the rim of the wall, glaring over it. It was an outer wall. He was looking into the green meadow that surrounded the castle. Across the grassy level, a giant black was striding, carrying a squirming captive under one arm as a man might carry a rebellious child. It was Sancha, her black hair falling in disheveled rippling waves, her olive skin contrasting abruptly with the glossy ebon of her captor. He gave no heed to her wrigglings and cries as he made for the outer archway. As he vanished within, Conan sprang recklessly down the wall and glided into the arch that opened into the further court. Crouching there, he saw the giant enter the court of the pool, carrying his writhing captive. Now he was able to make out the creature's details. The superb symmetry of body and limbs was more impressive at close range. Under the ebon skin, long, rounded muscles rippled, and Conan did not doubt that the monster could rend an ordinary man limb from limb. The nails of the fingers provided further weapons, for they were grown like the talons of a wild beast. The face was a carven, ebony mask. The eyes were tawny, a vibrant gold that glowed and glittered. But the face was inhuman. Each line, each feature, was stamped with evil. Evil transcending the mere evil of humanity. The thing was not a human. It could not be. It was a growth of life from the pits of blasphemous creation. A perversion of evolutionary development. The giant cast Sancha down on the sward where she groveled, crying with pain and terror. He cast a glance about, as if uncertain, and his tawny eyes narrowed as they rested on the images overturned and knocked from the wall. Then he stooped, grasped his captive by her neck and crotch, and strode purposefully toward the green pool, and Conan glided from his archway and raced like a wind of death across the sward. The giant wheeled, and his eyes flashed as he saw the bronzed Avenger rushing toward him. In the instant of surprise, his cruel grip relaxed, and Sancha wriggled free of his hands and fell to the grass. The taloned hands spread and clutched, but Conan ducked beneath their swoop and drove his sword through the giant's groin. The black went down like a felled tree, gushing blood, and the next instant Conan was seized in a frantic grasp as Sancha sprang up and threw her arms around him in a frenzy of terror and hysterical relief. He cursed as he disengaged himself, but his foe was already dead. The tawny eyes were glazing. The long ebony limbs had ceased to twitch.
"Oh, Conan!" Sancha was sobbing, clinging tenaciously to him. "What will become of us? What are these monsters? Oh, surely this is hell, and that was the devil."
"Then hell needs a new devil," the Barakin grinned fiercely. "But how did he get hold of you? Have they taken the ship?"
"I don't know."
She tried to wipe away her tears, fumbled for her skirt, and then remembered that she wore none.
"I came ashore. I saw you follow Zaparava, and I followed you both. I found Zaparava. Was it you who..."
"Who else?" he grunted. "What then?"
"I saw a movement in the trees."
She shuddered.
"I thought it was you. I called, and I saw that black thing squatting like an ape among the branches, leering down at me. It was like a nightmare. I couldn't run. All I could do was squeal. Then it dropped from the tree and seized me. Oh, oh, oh!"
She hid her face in her hands and was shaken anew at the memory of the horror.
"Well, we've got to get out of here," he growled, catching her wrist. "Come on, we've got to get to the crew."
"Most of them were asleep on the beach as I entered the woods," she said.
"Asleep?" he exclaimed profanely. "What in the seven devils of hell's fire and damnation?"
"Listen."
She froze, a white, quivering image of fright.
"I heard it," he snapped. "A moaning cry. Wait."
He bounded up the ledges again, and glaring over the wall, swore with a concentrated fury that made even Sancha gasp. The black men were returning, but they came not alone or empty-handed. Each bore a limp human form. Some bore two. Their captives were the freebooters. They hung slackly in their captors' arms, and but for an occasional vague movement or twitching, Conan would have believed them dead. They had been disarmed but not stripped. One of the blacks bore their sheathed swords, a great armload of bristling steel. From time to time, one of the seamen voiced a vague cry, like a drunkard calling out in sottish sleep. Like a trapped wolf, Conan glared about him. Three arches led out of the court of the pool. Through the eastern arch, the blacks had left the court, and through it they would presumably return. He had entered by the southern arch. In the western arch he had hidden, and had not had time to notice what lay beyond it. Regardless of his ignorance of the plan of the castle, he was forced to make his decision promptly. Springing down the wall, he replaced the images with frantic haste, dragged the corpse of his victim to the pool, and cast it in. It sank instantly, and as he looked, he distinctly saw an appalling contraction, a shrinking, a hardening. He hastily turned away, shuddering. Then he seized his companion's arm and led her hastily toward the southern archway, while she begged to be told what was happening.
"They've bagged the crew," he answered hastily. "I haven't any plan, but we'll hide somewhere and watch. If they don't look in the pool, they may not suspect our presence."
"But they'll see the blood in the grass."
"Maybe they'll think one of their own devils spilled it," he answered. "Anyway, we'll have to take the chance."
They were in the court from which he had watched the torture of the boy, and he led her hastily up the stair that mounted the southern wall and forced her into a crouching position behind the balustrade of the balcony. It was poor concealment, but the best they could do. Scarcely had they settled themselves when the blacks filed into the court. There was a resounding clash at the foot of the stairs, and Conan stiffened, grasping his sword. But the blacks passed through the archway on the southwestern side, and they heard a series of thuds and groans. The victims were casting their victims down on the sward. A hysterical giggle rose to Sancha's lips, and Conan quickly clapped his hand over her mouth, stifling the sound before it could betray them. After a while they heard the padding of many feet on the sward below, and then silence reigned. Conan peered over the wall. The court was empty. The blacks were once more gathered about the pool in the adjoining court, squatting on their haunches. They seemed to pay no heed to the great smears of blood on the sward and the jade rim of the pool. Evidently bloodstains were nothing unusual, nor were they looking into the pool. They were engrossed in some inexplicable conclave of their own. The tall black was playing on his golden pipes, and his companions listened like ebony statues. Taking Sancha's hand, Conan glided down the stair, stooping so that his head would not be visible above the wall. The cringing girl followed perforce, staring fearfully at the arch that led into the court of the pool, but through which, at that angle, neither the pool nor its grim throng were visible. At the foot of the stair lay the swords of the Zingarans. The clash they had heard had been the casting down of the captured weapons. Conan drew Sancha toward the southwestern arch, and they silently crossed the sward and entered the court beyond. There the freebooters lay in careless heaps, mustaches bristling, earrings glinting. Here and there one stirred or groaned restlessly. Conan bent down to them, and Sancha knelt beside him, leaning forward with her hands on her thighs.
"What is that sweet cloying smell?" she asked nervously. "It's on all their breaths."
"It's that damned fruit they were eating," he answered softly. "I remember the smell of it. It must have been like the black lotus that makes men sleep. By Crom, they are beginning to wake, but they are unarmed, and I have an idea that those black devils won't wait long before they begin their magic on them. What chance would the lads have, unarmed and stupid with slumber?"
He brooded for an instant, scowling with the intentness of his thoughts, then seized Sancha's olive shoulder in a grip that made her wince.
"Listen, I'll draw those black swine into another part of the castle and keep them busy for a while. Meanwhile, you shake these fools awake and bring their swords to them. It's a fighting chance. Can you do it?"
"I don't know,"
she stammered, shaking with terror and hardly knowing what she was saying. With a curse, Conan caught her thick tresses near her head and shook her till the walls danced to her dizzy sight.
"You must do it," he hissed at her. "It's our only chance."
"I'll do my best,"
she gasped, and with a grunt of commendation and an encouraging slap on the back that nearly knocked her down, he glided away. A few moments later he was crouching at the arch that opened into the court of the pool, glaring upon his enemies. They still sat about the pool, but were beginning to show evidences of an evil impatience. From the court where lay the rousing buccaneers, he heard their groans growing louder, beginning to be mingled with incoherent curses. He tensed his muscles and sank into a pantherish crouch, breathing easily between his teeth. The jeweled giant rose, taking his pipes from his lips, and at that instant Conan was among the startled blacks with a tigerish bound. And as a tiger leaps and strikes among his prey, Conan leaped and struck. Thrice his blade flickered before any could lift a hand in defense. Then he bounded from among them and raced across the sward. Behind him sprawled three black figures, their skulls split. But though the unexpected fury of his surprise had caught the giants off guard, the survivors recovered quickly enough. They were at his heels as he ran through the western arch, their long legs sweeping them over the ground at headlong speed. However, he felt confident of his ability to outfoot them at will, but that was not his purpose. He intended on leading them a long chase in order to give Sancha time to rouse and arm the Zingarans. And as he raced into the court beyond the western arch, he swore. This court differed from the others he had seen. Instead of being round, it was octagonal, and the arch by which he had entered was the only entrance or exit. Wheeling, he saw that the entire band had followed him in. A group clustered in the arch, and the rest spread out in a wide line as they approached. He faced them, backing slowly toward the northern wall. The line bent into a semicircle, spreading out to hem him in. He continued to move backward, but more and more slowly, noticing the spaces widening between the pursuers. They feared lest he should try to dart around a horn of the crescent and lengthen their line to prevent it. He watched with the calm alertness of a wolf, and when he struck it was with the devastating suddenness of a thunderbolt, full at the center of the crescent. The giant who barred his way went down, cloven to the middle of the breastbone, and the pirate was outside their closing ring before the blacks to the right and left could come to their stricken comrade's aid. The group at the gate prepared to receive the onslaught, but Conan did not charge them. He had turned and was watching his hunters without apparent emotion, and certainly without fear. This time they did not spread out in a thin line. They had learned that it was fatal to divide their forces against such an incarnation of clawing, rending fury. They bunched up in a compact mass and advanced on him without undue haste, maintaining their formation. Conan knew that if he fell afoul of that mass of taloned muscle and bone, there could be but one culmination. Once let them drag him down among them where they could reach him with their talons and use their greater body weight to advantage, even his primitive ferocity would not prevail. He glanced around the wall and saw a ledge-like projection above a corner on the western side. What it was he did not know, but it would serve his purpose. He began backing toward that corner, and the giants advanced more rapidly. They evidently thought that they were herding him into the corner themselves, and Conan found time to reflect that they probably looked on him as a member of a lower order, mentally inferior to themselves. So much the better. Nothing is more disastrous than underestimating one's antagonist. Now he was only a few yards from the wall, and the blacks were closing in rapidly, evidently thinking to pin him in the corner before he realized his situation. The group at the gate had deserted their post and were hastening to join their fellows. The giants half-crouched, eyes blazing like golden hellfire, teeth glistening whitely, taloned hands lifted as if to fend off attack. They expected an abrupt and violent move on the part of their prey, but when it came it took them by surprise. Conan lifted his sword, took a step toward them, then wheeled and raced to the wall. With a fleeting coil and release of steel muscles, he shot high into the air, and his straining arm hooked its fingers over the projection. Instantly there was a rending crash, and the jutting ledge gave way, precipitating the pirate back into the court. He hit on his back, which for all his springy thews would have broken but for the cushioning of the sward, and rebounding like a great cat he faced his foes. The dancing recklessness was gone from his eyes. They blazed like blue balefire. His mane bristled, his thin lips snarled. In an instant the affair had changed from a daring game to a battle of life and death, and Conan's savage nature responded with all the fury of the wild. The blacks, halted an instant by the swiftness of the episode, now made to sweep on him and drag him down. But in that instant a shout broke the stillness. Wheeling, the giants saw a disreputable throng crowding the arch. The buccaneers weaved drunkenly. They swore incoherently. They were addled and bewildered, but they grasped their swords and advanced with a ferocity not dimmed in the slightest by the fact that they did not understand what it was all about. As the blacks glared in amazement, Conan yelled stridently and struck them like a razor-edged thunderbolt. They fell like ripe grains beneath his blade, and the Zingarans, shouting with muddled fury, ran groggily across the court and fell on their gigantic foes with bloodthirsty zeal. They were still dazed, emerging hazily from drugged slumber. They had felt Sancha frantically shaking them and shoving swords into their hands, and had vaguely heard her urging them to some sort of action. They had not understood all she said, but the sight of strangers and blood streaming was enough for them. In an instant the court was turned into a battleground, which soon resembled a slaughterhouse. The Zingarans weaved and rocked on their feet, but they wielded their swords with power and effect, swearing prodigiously and quite oblivious to all wounds except those instantly fatal. They far outnumbered the blacks, but these proved themselves no mean antagonists. Towering above their assailants, the giants wrought havoc with talons and teeth, tearing out men's throats and dealing blows with clenched fists that crushed in skulls. Mixed and mingled in that melee, the buccaneers could not use their superior agility to the best advantage, and many were too stupid from their drugged sleep to avoid blows aimed at them. They fought with a blind, wild beast ferocity, too intent on dealing death to evade it. The sound of the hacking swords was like that of butcher's cleavers, and the shrieks, yells, and curses were appalling. Sancha, shrinking in the archway, was stunned by the noise and fury. She got a dazed impression of a whirling chaos in which steel flashed and hacked, arms tossed, snarling faces appeared and vanished, and straining bodies collided, rebounded, locked, and mingled in a devil's dance of madness. Details stood out briefly, like black etchings on a background of blood. She saw a Zingaran sailor, blinded by a great flap of scalp torn loose and hanging over his eyes, brace his straddling legs and drive his sword to the hilt in a black belly. She distinctly heard the buccaneer grunt as he struck and saw the victim's tawny eyes roll up in sudden agony. Blood and entrails gushed out over the driven blade. The dying black caught the blade with his naked hands and the sailor tugged blindly and stupidly. Then a black arm hooked about the Zingaran's head. A black knee was planted with cruel force in the middle of his back. His head was jerked back at a terrible angle and something cracked above the noise of the fray like the breaking of a thick branch. The conqueror dashed his victim's body to the earth, and as he did, something like a beam of blue light flashed across his shoulders from behind, from right to left. He staggered, his head toppled forward on his breast, and thence, hideously, to the earth. Sancha turned sick. She gagged and wished to vomit. She made abortive efforts to turn and flee from the spectacle, but her legs would not work, nor could she close her eyes. In fact, she opened them wider. Revolted, repelled, nauseated, yet she felt the awful fascination she had always experienced at the sight of blood. Yet this battle transcended anything she had ever seen fought out between human beings in port raids or sea battles. Then she saw Conan. Separated from his mates by the whole mass of the enemy, Conan had been enveloped in a black wave of arms and bodies and dragged down. Then they would quickly have stamped the life out of him. But he had pulled down one of them with him, and the black's body protected that of the pirate beneath him. They kicked and tore at the Barakan and dragged at their writhing comrade. But Conan's teeth were set desperately in his throat, and the pirate clung tenaciously to his dying shield. An onslaught of Zingarans caused a slackening of the press, and Conan threw aside the corpse and rose, blood-smeared and terrible. The giants towered above him like great black shadows, clutching, buffeting the air with terrible blows, but he was as hard to hit or grapple as a blood-mad panther, and at every turn or flash of his blade, blood jetted. He had already taken punishment enough to kill three ordinary men, but his bull-like vitality was undiminished. His war cry rose above the medley of the carnage, and the bewildered but furious Zingarans took fresh heart and redoubled their strokes until the rending of flesh and the crunching of bone beneath swords was almost drowned in howls of pain and wrath. The blacks wavered and broke for the gate, and Sancha squealed at their coming and scurried out of the way. They jammed in the narrow archway, and the Zingarans stabbed and hacked at their straining backs with strident yelps of glee. The gate was a shambles before the survivors broke through and scattered, each for himself. The battle became a chase, across grassy courts, up shimmering stairs, over the slanting roofs of fantastic towers. Even along the broad coping of the walls, the giants fled, dripping blood at every step, harried by the merciless pursuers as by wolves. Cornered, some of them turned at bay, and men died. But the ultimate result was always the same, a mangled black body twitching on the sword, or hurled writhing and twisting from a parapet or tower roof. Sancha had taken refuge in the court of the pool, where she crouched, shaking with terror. Outside rose a fierce yelling. Feet pounded the sword, and through the arch burst a black, red-stained figure. It was the giant who wore the gemmed headband. A squat pursuer was close behind, and the black turned at the very brink of the pool. In his extremity he had picked up a sword dropped by a dying sailor, and as the Zingaran rushed recklessly at him, he struck with the unfamiliar weapon. The buccaneer dropped with his skull crushed, but so awkwardly the blow was dealt that the blade shivered in the giant's hand. He hurled the hilt at the figures which thronged the arch and bounded toward the pool, his face a convulsed mask of hate. Conan burst through the men at the gate, and his feet spurned the sword in his headlong charge. But the giant threw his great arms wide, and from his lips rang an inhuman cry. The only sound made by a black during the entire fight. It screamed to the sky its awful hate. It was like a voice howling from the pits. At the sound, the Zingarans faltered and hesitated, but Conan did not pause. Silently and murderously he drove at the ebon figure, poised on the brink of the pool. But even as his dripping sword gleamed in the air, the black wheeled and bounded high. For a flash of an instant they saw him poised in mid-air above the pool. Then with an earth-shaking roar the green waters rose and rushed up to meet him, enveloping him in a green volcano. Conan checked his headlong rush, just in time to keep from toppling into the pool, and he sprang back, thrusting his men behind him with mighty swings of his arms. The green pool was like a geyser now, the noise rising to deafening volume as the great column of water reared and reared, blossoming at the crest with a great crown of foam. Conan was driving his men to the gate, herding them ahead of him, beating them with the flat of his sword. The roar of the waterspout seemed to have robbed them of their faculties. Seeing Sancha standing paralyzed, staring with wide-eyed terror at the seething pillar, he accosted her with a bellow that cut through the thunder of the water and made her jump out of her daze. She ran to him, arms outstretched, and he caught her up under one arm and raced out of the court. In the court which opened on the outer world, the survivors had gathered, weary, tattered, wounded, and blood-stained, and stared gaping dumbly at the great unstable pillar that towered momentarily nearer the blue vault of the sky. Its green trunk was laced with white, its foaming crown was thrice the circumference of its base. Momentarily it threatened to burst and fall in an engulfing torrent, yet it continued to jet skyward. Conan's eyes swept the bloody naked group, and he cursed to see only a score. In the stress of the moment he grasped a corsair by the neck and shook him so violently that blood from the man's wounds spattered all near them.
"Where's the rest?" he bellowed in the victim's ear.
"That's all,"
the other yelled back above the roar of the geyser.
"The others were all killed by those black—"
"Well, get out of here,"
roared Conan, giving him a thrust that sent him staggering toward the outer archway.
"That fountain is going to burst in a moment."
"We'll all be drowned,"
squawked a freebooter, limping toward the arch.
"Drowned hell," roared Conan. "We'll be turned to pieces of petrified bone. Get out, blast you."
He ran to the outer archway, one eye on the green roaring tower that loomed so awfully above him, the other on stragglers. Dazed with bloodlust, fighting, and the thunderous noise, some of the Zingarans moved like men in a trance. Conan hurried them up. His method was simple. He grasped loiterers by the scruff of the neck, impelled them violently through the gate, added impetus with a lusty kick in the rear, spicing his urgings for haste with pungent comments on the victim's ancestry. Sancha showed an inclination to remain with him, but he jerked away her twining arms, blaspheming luridly, and accelerated her movements with a tremendous slap on the posterior that sent her scurrying across the plateau. Conan did not leave the gate until he was sure all his men who yet lived were out of the castle and started across the level meadow. Then he glanced again at the roaring pillar, looming against the sky, dwarfing the towers, and he too fled that castle of nameless horrors. The Zingarans had already crossed the rim of the plateau and were fleeing down the slopes. Sancha waited for him beyond the crest of the first slope beyond the rim, and there he paused for an instant to look back at the castle. It was as if a gigantic green-stemmed, white-blossomed flower swayed above the towers. The roar filled the sky. Then the jade-green and snowy pillar broke with a noise like the rending of the skies. The walls and towers were blotted out in a thunderous torrent. Conan caught the girl's hand and fled. Slope after slope rose and fell before them, and behind sounded the rushing of a river. A glance over his straining shoulder showed a broad green ribbon rising and falling as it swept over slopes. The torrent had not spread out and dissipated. Like a giant serpent, it flowed over the depressions and the rounded crest. It held a consistent course. It was following them. The realization roused Conan to a greater pitch of endurance. Sancha stumbled and went to her knees with a moaning cry of despair and exhaustion. Catching her up, Conan tossed her over his giant shoulder and ran for it. His breast heaved, his knees trembled, his breath tore in great gasps through his teeth. He reeled in his gait. Ahead of him he saw the sailors toiling, spurred on by the terror that gripped them. The ocean burst suddenly on his view, and in his swimming gaze floated the wastrel, unharmed. Men tumbled into the boats, helter-skelter. Sancha fell into the bottom and lay there in a crumpled heap. Conan, though the blood thundered in his ears and the world swam red to his gaze, took an oar with the panting sailors. With hearts ready to burst from exhaustion, they pulled for the ship. The green river burst through the fringe of trees. Those trees fell as if their stems had been cut away, and as they sank into the jade-colored flood, they vanished. The tide flowed out over the beach, lapped at the ocean, and the waves turned a deeper, more sinister green. Unreasoning, instinctive fear held the buccaneers, making them urge their agonized bodies and reeling brains to greater effort. What they feared they knew not, but they did know that in that abominable smooth green ribbon was a menace to body and to soul. Conan knew, and as he saw the broad line slip into the waves and stream through the water toward them, without altering its shape or course, he called up his last ounce of reserve strength so fiercely that the oar snapped in his hands. But their prows bumped against the timbers of the wastrel, and the sailors staggered up the chains, leaving the boats to drift as they would. Sancha went up on Conan's broad shoulder, hanging limp as a corpse, to be dumped unceremoniously on the deck as the Barakan took the wheel, gasping orders to the skeleton of a crew. Throughout the affair he had taken the lead without question, and they had instinctively followed him. They reeled about like drunken men, fumbling mechanically at ropes and braces. The anchor chain, unshackled, splashed into the water. The sails unfurled and bellied in a rising wind. The wastrel quivered and shook herself and swung majestically seaward. Conan glared shoreward like a tongue of emerald flame, a ribbon licked out on the water futilely, an oar's length from the wastrel's keel. It advanced no farther. From the end of that tongue his gaze followed an unbroken stream of lambent green across the white beach and over the slopes until it faded in the blue distance. The Barakan, regaining his wind, grinned at the panting crew. Sancha was standing near him, hysterical tears coursing down her cheeks. Conan's breeks hung in blood-stained tatters. His girdle and sheath were gone. His sword, driven upright into the deck beside him, was notched and crusted with red. Blood thickly clotted his dark mane, and one ear had been half torn from his head. His arms, legs, breast, and shoulders were bitten and clawed as if by panthers. But he grinned as he braced his powerful legs and swung on the wheel in sheer exuberance of muscular might.
"What now?"
faltered the girl.
"The plunder of the seas," he laughed. "A paltry crew, and that chewed and clawed to pieces, but they can work the ship, and crews can always be found. Come here, girl, and give me a kiss."
"A kiss?" she cried hysterically. "You think of kisses at a time like this?"
His laughter boomed above the snap and thunder of the sails as he caught her up off her feet in the crook of one mighty arm and smacked her red lips with resounding relish.
"I think of life," he roared. "The dead are dead. What is past is done. I have a ship and a fighting crew and a girl with lips like wine, and that's all I ever asked. Lick your wounds, bullies, and break out a cask of ale. You're going to work ship as she was never worked before. Dance and sing while you buckle to it, damn you! To the devil with empty seas! We're bound for waters where the seaports are fat and the merchant ships are crammed with plunder!"